Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
What's happening across Connecticut? Melissa in the Morning's conversation with Governor Ned Lamont. Now on WICC 600.
I just want to give people the heads up. Governor Lamont cannot do a double today because he's got a lot going on, including something in our newscast this morning. You'll be meeting with U.S. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona, who is also our former state education commissioner today. So we will not keep you too long, Governor Lamont, but thank you so much for being here.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, everybody.
So a couple of questions that immediately out of the gate. Yesterday, Governor Lamont, you could feel how frustrated you are and heartbroken you are that yet another young life was taken due to gun violence in Connecticut. I'm curious, you know, it sounds like you clearly, and we've talked about it on the show, you want to crack down on crime. Do you think now that you've made the call, a special session could happen before February to actually talk about maybe some of those GOP proposals to fix some of the problems we're facing?
What I wanted to do was let people know that how much COVID has impacted people's state of mind. And you see it in terms of divorce, you see it in terms of domestic abuse, you see it in terms of addiction, and you see it in terms of some aspects of juvenile crime. And for 90% of those kids, we've just got to get them back on track with the wraparound services and support they need. And for those 10% of those kids who are really the chronic offenders, we wanted to make sure that they were not out and about able to cause mischief. And it's that group that we're really focused on in terms of, A, additional judges to make sure that, you know, justice is swift, make sure that we have additional cops on the street, cops on the beat, community policing going forward. And those are all things that we've got in place right now.
So those seem like, though, there are things that we could build on that we could literally do, as you mentioned, right now. I mean, wouldn't you want a special session to get the ball rolling quicker to crack down on these things versus waiting till February?
Well, I'm not quite sure, frankly, what the special session would accomplish that we're not doing already. But if there are some very specific things that we want to get done, why not? So I think we're going to sit down with the leadership and see if there are things they need to do legislatively over and above the things that we're doing right now.
There are some Democratic senators specifically who feel like it's ridiculous that we bring crime up so much. In fact, they think the media is exploding it. They think that the Republican Party is just trying to scare people, because when you compare Connecticut to places like Chicago, sure, we look great. But when you compare Connecticut to Connecticut, I think whoever the parents and the loved ones of that 14-year-old boy or any of the other people we've lost, they're going to tell you it's not safe enough. So what are your comments, Governor Lamont, to some of the representatives and senators who say we don't really have that big of an issue here? This is not as big of a problem as we're making it out to be.
I would say, first of all, don't talk down our police and our social service workers. We do have one of the lowest you know, crime in the country. And for that, I'm very thankful. But I'm also cognizant of the fact that Will died, and I think he died unnecessarily. This is the kid that was shot in the back of the head. Mm-hmm. And his mom said, look, if we were stricter with him, if he had tighter control with a probation officer, he might be alive today. So you're absolutely right. If crime can be down statewide, but if there was crime in your neighborhood, it's not down.
And we're talking to Governor Lamont this morning. Governor Lamont, another big story this week. State regulators approved the $103 million settlement with Eversource over its poor response to Tropical Storm Isaias. I'm sure you are happy about this, that we are moving forward. There have been a lot of big things that Pura specifically has made happen. And Mrs. Gillette, you've given a lot of credit to. But my understanding, Governor, is she kind of was sort of I guess in this decision, she was sort of not in full agreement. There were other things she wanted to work on, and she was sort of overtaken in this decision. And some have said it kind of undermines her position now with Pura. What is your response to that?
She doesn't undermine her position with me. She's been tough. And look, after Isaias, after the slow response, after the outages, all that frustration, we were going to hold you know, in particular, Eversource accountable. And they're going to pay well over $100 million. That's A lot of that money is going to go right back to the ratepayers. I think it got their attention loud and clear. If this happens again, there'll be penalties to pay. And that's what we call performance-based regulation. And Marissa Gillette, who's the chairperson over at PURA, the regulatory body, was at the front of that.
Okay, but you feel Marissa Gillette has handled this very well, which I agree with. But you feel that this settlement reflects what she also would have liked to have seen with Eversource. I know she's been very outspoken on WICC about the fact, you know, she hasn't come right out because she's very professional and good at her job. But, you know, the worry of monopoly with Eversource, that they handle more than just, you know, they handle multiple utilities, you know, our water, our gas, our electricity, and the worry of it being a monopoly and what that could mean for us, for Connecticut residents.
Yeah, well, remember, utilities are sort of always monopolies. That's why they're tightly regulated. That's why Marissa and PURA in general exacted the strongest punishment by far in the history of the state in terms of fees and fines that Eversource will remember. That's why they responded better. So, Let's see if we've made a difference. By the way, Eversource will now have a Connecticut CEO, so I think that's important. You know, I think Marissa didn't like the CEO reporting for the Eversource board of directors, but, you know, that's just the way it works when you have a regional a utility like Eversource.
We're talking to Governor Ned Lamont this morning. A couple more questions, then I know you have to go, Governor Lamont, and we appreciate your time. What happened last week in D.C.? We know you were there for a couple of days, some big meetings happening. Let us in on it. What'd you talk about?
Oh, yeah. I met with the CEO of General Dynamics, which, you know, has Electric Boat, one of our biggest employers, make sure that we are synced in terms of all in particular, the job training needs they had, some discussions about, testing and vaccinations, went on to the White House, and we had a wonderful meeting with the president in the Oval Office, a half dozen governors. He was he's got a sunny disposition, and, everybody around the White House was nervous, and Sinema and Manchin and Reckoning and infrastructure. And he just said, look, we're going to get past one of the most important infrastructure bills in the history of this country. Whether it gets passed today or next week or 2 weeks, it will make an enormous difference for this country. And I need you as governors to say why it's so important to your states.
And Governor Lamont, last thing, I know next week could be a really big turning point for COVID and the fight against COVID, I should say. Childhood vaccinations could roll out as early as November 3rd. I'm not sure exactly when they would come to Connecticut, but it sounds like they'd be at children's pediatrician office, things like that. Anything that you could tell people ahead of time, like, is this going to go the same process as adults, essentially, with the online or phone calls? Or do you think most pediatrician offices will reach out to people directly and say, hey, we've got them in-house, come on in and get your vaccines?
Yeah, thank you for that question. It's going to be a little different. I mean, these are kids. Parents have to be on board. It requires parental, permission. We want to start with the doctors, like you said, and the pediatricians. Some kids don't have a doc, so we have the federally qualified health centers there to explain to parents exactly why this is in the best interest of your child and all the other kids in the class. So it's only with parental permission on a voluntary basis. But I'd like to think starting as early as next week, a lot of kids know that this is the right thing to do.
Governor Lamont, we appreciate the time you could give us. Thank you so much. And we know that you'll be meeting later this morning, as I mentioned, with U.S. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona. So we'll wait to hear how that roundtable discussion goes later today. Thank you so much.
Connecticut's very own Miguel Cardona. Thanks, Melissa. Bye-bye.
All right. Have a great day. Welcoming to the show for the first time, Mayor Richard Zekin, who represents Derby. Good morning, Mayor Zekin. Thanks for stopping by.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for the invitation. I got to confess, I've never heard your show before, but I did turn it on a little while ago. And I like what I hear. It's very informative.
Well, thank you.
Your listeners there.
Thank you so much, Mayor Zekin. Yes, it was actually some of your listeners who, well, it was kind of a combination. Some of your listeners had reached out and said, hey, why don't we ever hear Mayor Zekin? And then I have Ansonia Mayor David Cassetti on, and we talk about Derby a lot. You guys do a lot of stuff together. And I thought, well, why isn't Mayor Zekin on? So I'm glad that we made the connection, and I'm glad you're here. So thank you so much.
It was a definitely a miscommunication. I just think one of your listeners, Dolores, that emailed me actually and said the same thing you just said about how come you haven't been on here. So that's why I just stepped it up and tried to get on here. So once again, thank you and let's go at it.
Absolutely. Well, Mayor Zekin, I do have a number of questions, a lot of them from our listeners, but this one I have to say is kind of at my top of mind. As I mentioned, I have Ansonia Mayor David Cassetti on every other week for the most part to just give us updates on some of the development things going on in the city, job growth, things like that. And we consistently come back to the senior center. We just talked about how the police station is all set up on Main Street, and part of that building is going to be used as a senior center. But Mayor Cassetti would love for it to also involve the Derby residents. And consistently, I've asked him why that's not happening. And he basically says, you got to talk to Derby. It's not on their end. So I guess the conversation kind of starts with you, Mayor. Why isn't Derby moving on this opportunity? Or maybe it's not an opportunity, but it sounds like it is.
No, absolutely it is. And I've been a proponent for that for years. The building that they're in right now, three stories, a lot of stairs, a lot of our seniors in there are walkers, wheelchair bound. It's tough for them to get up and down the elevator we've been having a problem with. So with the building that's going on in Ansonia right now, one level, great opportunity for space. I think it's over 8,000 square foot. We have a police department upstairs, which what better place to put our seniors in a well-protected, solid building like that? And God forbid something happened downstairs, the officers would come down there, they're trained medical, to be able to assist. A lot of it was a log jam with the Board of Aldermen. We were trying to get meetings to, number one, we had a meeting in Ansonia. They didn't show up. The Alderman from Derby didn't show up. It was very informative for all our residents. Then we ended up having one in Derby. The Alderman showed up on that one. Then they weren't taking any votes on it. So we ended up with a vote to get an independent lawyer to handle it because corporate counsel in Ansonia and Derby are the same corporate counsel. So we have an independent lawyer right now. It's in executive session, and they're ironing out the details right now. I definitely see it because the seniors in Derby, the ones I talk to, are very excited, and they want to join over there. And most of these seniors belong to multiple senior centers, Orange, Shelton, Seymour, Ansonia, Derby. So they're all over the place when it comes to senior centers. But I think Derby and Ansonia will save a lot of money. We'll be able to put that back into our seniors, activities, programs for them. So I'm a great proponent for it. I just need the aldermen to vote on it, and then we can get it going.
So I guess a two-part question for you, Mayor Zekin. So how much money is it? I guess I'm confused, like, why the board won't move forward on it. Like, is it just that it's not top of mind? Do they have concerns? It's a little odd that you're the mayor and you're totally for it. You're on board, but the board's not moving on this. Like, I'm missing something. Am I missing something here? Maybe I am.
Well, I'm a Republican mayor in town. The board is the Democrats, majority over there. They have to, their executive board on there. They need to come up with the answers. We proposed everything. We put all the items that were on the table, what it would cost Derby. A lot of this is in executive session, so we really can't talk about it, but we're trying to iron out a deal where we can go in there. I mean, I wouldn't want to see it as a permanent thing. I would like to see a part-time, maybe like a lease. But a lot of this stuff is being discussed between the lawyers, and we're hoping to be moving on this very shortly because nothing better to be a nice, safe, one-level place, and our seniors don't have to worry about falling down, nice, safe parking. We have our garage in Derby. It's old. It's kind of run down. They have to walk a long distance to get into our senior center from the parking garage. So more of it's safety for them in the activities. I want to see them busier. We got two buses from Valley Transit that we purchased from the state. I would like to take them on more trips around the state. So, I mean, combining what we both cities, we're going to have more money to do more things for the city, for our seniors.
I know that there's legal action being taken. Like you said, there are lawyers now involved, so I certainly don't want to compromise anything. But Mayor Zekin, do you mind sharing what are some of the reservations before legal action had to be taken? What were some of the reservations that the board had to not move forward with this? Like, was it financial? What were the reasons that they weren't moving on it? Do you know?
Well, so some of it involves the initial investment by the city. What are you know, in San Antonio's building, how much are we going to be involved in it? But I think a lot of it has to do with we'll be regionalizing with another town. I mean, we've been a bit of a proponent with David Setti and Shelton for regionalizing many of our departments. And it's been for a cost savings for Derby and the other towns that are being regionalized with it. So with the regionalization that we would get, it would definitely, we figured it was going to cut our budget and Ansonia's budgets in almost in half. And that money that's saved will go back to the residents. So, and possibly could take, possibly could pay for our initial investment there. And then if we have that building in Derby, we don't need it anymore. If we sell that, we can get our investment back. So those are some of the things I think would be a win-win for the city of Derby. But like I said, it's in the hands of the aldermen, and they're ironing out with the lawyers.
We are checking in with Mayor Richard Zekin here of Derby. So here are some of the questions we're getting from our listeners ahead of the general election, Mayor Zekin. You have talked in your campaign about providing a tax relief program for seniors and single-family homeowners. How exactly is that going to work, and how will that be paid for?
Well, what the state of Connecticut, you're not allowed to do tax breaks unless you get the okay through the general legislation up in Hartford. So we've already designed a bill to give to our legislators from Derby and bring it up to Hartford and present it. So right now, the veterans, you can get a tax break. Seniors get a tax break. What we're looking at, especially for distressed cities like Derby and Ansonia, the single-family homeowners, and even if they have a two-family and they're owner-occupied, need a break. Because when I walked into the city hall in 2017, we were $1.8 million in a hole when the city was told we had a $1.2 million reserve fund. Well, it was a lie. It wasn't there. It was mismanagement. But we corrected all that. So now we're sitting at a comfortable 8.6% fund balance, and it's moving up. I'd like to take some of that money that we're going to be getting from our developments that are coming into town that are approved. There's four of them for downtown. We have two approved fuel cell clean energy to electricity projects. We're going to produce about $5 million in the next 20 years. So that's revenue, tax money coming in. I want to disperse that back to our hardworking, blue-collar Derby residents that shouldered the burden from this deficit and the misappropriation of what they did with these funds back before I took over. So I think the time of the taxpayers taking all of the the taxes and paying for the city to run should be over. And I think our legislators up in Hartford should look at us distressed cities and give us the opportunity to give back. If it's a couple hundred bucks to each homeowner, listen, a couple hundred bucks in their pocket is better than nothing. Do I see big cities like Greenwich, Reading, and stuff like that needing a program like this? No, they definitely don't need it. Citizens of Derby, Ansonia, with distressed municipalities definitely need something to help our residents. And they've been crying this out for years, and I see this as a great opportunity, and I can't see Hartford saying no to us.
Mayor Zekin, there was something you said actually in the beginning of that answer. You said the missing money issue is fixed. What's interesting about that is, according to your challenger, there still is an issue of a $1.1 million gap in revenue that was included in this year's budget, even though it was not approved by the legislature. Can you comment on that?
They're talking about the ARP funds, the COVID monies. That's a pass-through item. It's a one-time deal. It wasn't included in the budget. I know the town clerk, Mark Arfalo, brought that up in a couple of the other Democrats, but it was a pass through. They knew exactly what it is. The tax board approved everything going through there, so it's not unaccounted for. It is part of it. It's off to the side, and we're actually, after what's going on with the surrounding communities, we're looking towards a independent handler to oversee those funds to make sure they're not misappropriated anyway. So I definitely want to make double check our eyes on our fund money and our COVID money.
Okay, so just to be clear, that $1.1 million, there's no gap. That is all accounted for. That's all. That's not a problem.
That's not a problem.
Okay. So moving on, I do want to actually really quick kind of go back to something. So with your tax relief program, again, this hasn't been approved yet by the state, but if it does, can you just reiterate who's paying for that? Like, what's that going to look like? Who's paying for that?
three initials, it's going to be about, it looks like around 500 to 600,000, less than a mil. Like I said, we have a very healthy fund balance now. The reason we have this healthy fund balance is because we had a tax to residents to bring it back up from the negative, from where it was left to us. So once we can keep it in between the 8 and 10 where the bonding commissions and when the bonding agencies want us to be, we're going to stay nice and healthy, keep our great ratings that we have, be able to borrow money. But we got to keep it in there between the 8 and 10%, and we'll be able to give the money back to our residents. Plus, like I said, we have 4 approved projects. That's going to bump our grand list up potentially $60 to $70 million. The fuel cells, $250,000 extra a year coming into a city on properties that we were only getting $1,500 a year on. So, I mean, it's a win-win for the city of Derby. It's like we haven't been sitting around, you know, hoping and praying something's going to happen. We rolled up our sleeves, got into the ditches, and actually did great projects to take the burden off of our taxpayers in Derby.
I'm curious, Mayor Zekin, actually going off of that point, you have raised the idea of creating a transformation zone or zones. What exactly is that?
Well, that's going to be basically there's some areas in town that the zoning doesn't fit. But we have a great zoning board. Like I said, just approved 4 major projects in the city of Derby. We had a couple of pockets, the Hops Company, Bad Sons, 2 excellent places that, should I say, please join, stop down. And they're existing non-conforming areas. So we have to juggle keeping these businesses alive, afloat, and letting them continue. But they have to stay on their parcel. So like the Hops Company, parking is a major issue over here. We want to give the arm and the strength to the zoning board where if they could have an extra acreages on their property and expand their parking on their property to take it away from the neighborhoods, that's a win-win for the neighborhood. I'm not talking about expanding to 5 stories in a residential area, but anything to improve the quality of life around our neighborhoods and to enhance the businesses so they can thrive in our city. So that's like a component of it, to really give the zoning board the strength to really help these businesses out in these areas that need a little tweaking on the zoning and the ability to build something there.
Mayor Zekin, I know we have run out of time, but I think this is one more question before the general election that many people want to know. The Derby Charter was updated last year to make the mayor's position full-time. Here's the question. Are you committed to being a full-time mayor I think it's public knowledge that you are also a part-time Bethany police officer. So how's that going to work?
Oh, absolutely. Like, it's never been a secret. Very proud of my history as a honorably discharged United States Air Force veteran, as a decorated Hamden police officer. It's tough to become an officer nowadays and to continue on to help the citizens of Bethany. I'm very proud of that. I mean, it's a very admirable job profession. And yes, I mean, right now I work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365. It's 8:05. I'm on the radio with you. I mean, if my opponent was saying, well, it doesn't start till 8:30, I guess you would have to wait till 8:30 to talk to him. But I'm available constantly. I'm available at night. I'm available during the day. Emergencies come up. Maybe it's the officer in me, too. Fires, shootings, police activity, fire activity, disasters. I'm out there. I'm in the rain. I'm driving around, checking things out, helping residents when they need it. So anybody to say, even if it's quote-unquote part-time, it's never part-time as a chief elected official for any city. And I'd be hard-pressed if you find any CEO in this state to say, oh, you're only Monday through Friday. Absolutely not. So, absolutely. I am committed. I've been committed to this city, and I just want to work to make it better. And let me tell you, it's already better from where I found it 4 years ago.
But I just want to make sure that this is clear, Mayor Zekin, and I totally respect what you're saying, but you will continue to be a police officer part-time and still serve the city as the mayor if you are reelected.
I will. I have weekends I could do it. I'll reevaluate that. I know they raised the salaries and everything like that. Listen, I mean, times are tough for everybody. I mean, to pick up a couple extra bucks here and there. And the great thing with technology, too, if I'm out there on a Sunday night, they can call. If there's a major emergency, I'm able to answer direct and lead, you know, from my cell phone, too. But I'm committed to 100% leading this city, and I will lead this city.
Mayor Richard Zekin, again, a pleasure to have you on for the first time, WICC. I hope it's not the last. Thank you so much, and good luck next week.
Thank you. And like I said, I got your number now, so let's stay in touch. This was excellent. I really had a good time, and thank you for the listeners getting in contact with me and getting me on here. And I look forward to this again.
Thank you, Mayor Zekin. Appreciate your time.
What's happening in Washington and how it affects you? Melissa in the Morning. Welcome Congressman Jim Himes to WICC 600.
Good morning, Congressman Himes. Thanks for popping back on this morning. Appreciate it. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Doing well, thank you. Back in Connecticut for the weekend.
Oh, that's nice. You doing anything for Halloween?
My kids are a little older than yours are, right? They're often we're empty nesters, so I'll
that's
be
true.
Handing out candy to, on Halloween, not helping kids with their costumes.
Hey, you know what? That's not so bad. That's not so bad.
Not so bad.
I would take that over a toddler. I'm telling you, I'm a little jealous of you. So it's all good. It's all good. Well, that's
a
nice.
Toddler with a lot of sugar in it.
Yeah, exactly. You know what's going on. So that's nice. I'm glad that you're back here. So we really didn't get to dive into this yesterday, and I have to be honest with you, Congressman. I was a little jealous that you did a whole dive in yesterday on Lisa's show. I was a little jealous of that. I was like, oh,
well,
man.
Well, you know, in the end, I didn't end up doing it. The president came to address us. So, it turns out that you really shouldn't walk out. I mean, look, you and I both know that Lisa Wexler is amazing, but you don't walk out on the president of the United States for her, right?
True. That's
so
very
no,
true.
No need to be jealous. No need at all.
All right. Well, that's good, because I was at a Halloween parade for the toddler yesterday, and I didn't get to hear your interview. And I was hoping, okay, I don't want to have him repeat everything the same because, you know, Lisa's fabulous. But, okay, well, that's great. Then all of my questions can go right back to the top. That's excellent.
And actually it's all good because we're very close. When we talked last week, we had qualified by the numbers, right? Mm-hmm. And the governor needed to make the request and the president needed to approve it. All that has happened. It's sitting with the president right now. I do expect that sometime in the next couple of days, the president will issue the disaster declaration. So, no, it's all good. Today, people can't, you know, until the president makes that declaration, the aid is not yet available. But, yeah, no, we should still go through it because, I can't imagine the president's not going to make the declaration.
Okay, so let's dive right into it. And we're talking about, this is post-Ida, correct? This is specifically for
correct.
Ida. Okay, so what
right.
do people need
so the
to
way
know?
To think, the way to think about this is FEMA money is the last money you get. And what I mean by that is your insurance, and most people do have some form of house insurance. Some people have rental insurance. You know, any damage that can be covered by insurance must be covered by insurance. So this is really for uninsured losses, right? And it's not just losses. So, yes, if you have to repair or replacement of your of parts of your home, that you can qualify for individual assistance from FEMA. But it also extends to things like if you had to go live in a hotel or a motel for a couple of nights, you can and I want to be really careful here. There's, you know, we don't have time to go through all of the ins and outs, but
sure.
there are certain qualifying aspects. But generally speaking, uninsured losses to your house, to your belongings, to, as I was saying, if you had to spend time in a hotel or a motel, that can be reimbursed. You know, there's aspects of, you know, if you suffered a medical loss, a funeral, hopefully you didn't, but that can in some circumstances be covered by the individual assistance. And then, you know, there's also hazard mitigation funds, meaning if you can rebuild in a way that makes your house more resilient to the kind of storms we're seeing too many of, there are some instances in which that rebuilding can be, you know, FEMA can assist with that. So
that's awesome. That's really cool.
What we're going to do, Melissa, again, I always it's important for people to know that stuff, but it's also a little fiddly on the details. What we're going to do the moment that disaster declaration gets out, we've got a pamphlet ready to go, you know, with links and more detailed explanations where people can go to look to see if they would, in fact, qualify for this stuff.
So I think that's super helpful talking to Congressman Jim Himes this morning. This is about FEMA money and what you could, the keyword here, could qualify for following Ida and the destruction that was left behind here in Connecticut. So here's my question, Congressman Himes. You came on weeks ago, maybe months, probably months, after Ida happened, and you had said, listen, anyone who has suffered damage, as you mentioned, if you had to stay somewhere else as things were being done to your home, your property, whatever, you said, send that stuff into your town or city. Make it on the record. Because at that time, we were just trying to qualify for the money. So here's my question. If you're somebody who didn't do that initial, hey, here's what I went through, do you have any shot of qualifying, or did you have to be one of the original, I'm going to call them the original, people who sent in those reports to your town or city?
Yeah, you do not. You do not.
You
so
don't?
In other
okay.
words, the reason we had to go through the exercise of quantifying the uninsured damage is because that gets us that qualifies us as a county, right? Once you're qualified as a county, anybody with qualifying uninsured losses can apply for that aid. So even if you didn't go, I mean, it's sad that if you didn't, because part of the reason this process has taken a long time is because it's taken some time for us to get across the thresholds. You know, you got to get through millions of dollars of losses before the federal government kicks in dough.
Right.
But no, if you didn't participate in that process and you have genuine uninsured losses, you can still qualify for the aid.
Wow. Okay. Now, of course, we are waiting, obviously, for the stamp of approval from the president. But how soon do you think, if you were to guess, make a little guesstimation here, how soon do you think people could start seeing that aid, or at least start like applying for it?
Yeah, well, the initial part of the process can take place online, and that obviously can happen pretty much immediately after the presidential declaration. And I'll make sure to give you a heads up. I mean, we'll make sure people know. But you know, people can go to the FEMA website right now and look at all the details that we didn't get into. Once the president makes that declaration, they can start the process of applying. And, you know, then it's not instant, right? I mean, we're talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars of taxpayer funds here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know how, believe me, I've spent the last, you know, whatever it's been, 8 weeks trying to qualify for this aid. But, you know, this is your money at the end of the day. And so we want to make sure that, you know, there's not a lot of fraud. We want to make sure that people really understand the programs. But nonetheless, I mean, people who think they may qualify for the aid based on the conversation we've had, hey, go to the FEMA website today and familiarize yourself with the details and how you apply, because it can move pretty quick once the president makes the declaration.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I mentioned, it hasn't been signed off by the president yet. But how much money are we thinking, Congressman Himes, we could qualify for, if that's a fair question to ask?
So the caps are on individual aid, right? And I deliberately didn't bring it up because there is it's a little complicated, but there is, roughly speaking, and again, I'm going to encourage people to go to the website for the actual details, but roughly speaking, there's about a $35,000-ish dollar cap on what an individual household can receive. So I don't want anybody to come away from the conversation thinking that, you know, they're getting $100,000. There is a cap in the neighborhood of $35,000. The average award is much smaller, right? Because remember, we're talking about uninsured damages here. Mm-hmm. You know, if your house got wrecked, chances are your insurance company is going to cover most of that. But, you know, if you wind up with $5,000 of uninsured damages, I think there's a good chance you can get that covered through this program.
All right. Well, Congressman Himes, we really appreciate you going through all the ins and outs. And as you mentioned, as soon as we get the thumbs up from the president, if you let me know, I can put this back on the air and replay this for our listeners, just so they have the heads up and they would know where to go to start that application process.
Sounds good. And again, I'd recommend, you know, why not, if you had damage, why not go to, you know, the website's real straightforward. It's FEMA.gov. Go to it and check it out, because the details are there.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Congressman Himes, thank you so much for popping on and giving us this information. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa. Take care.
Talk to you soon. I tell you, sometimes the stars just align. After last week's conversation with Senator Kevin Kelly in regards to new GOP proposals and cracking down crime, I thought, oh, I need to keep talking about this conversation. I'm not done with him yet. And so we booked him to come on Friday morning. And, you know, initially I thought, oh, it's really long, like a week and a half. That's a really long time. But, you know, lo and behold, it's interesting. Yesterday afternoon, Governor Lamont is saying it is time to get tough on juvenile crimes. And this could, in fact, be the call that we need to maybe see a special session sooner rather than later. And lo and behold, who's here this morning but Senator Kevin Kelly. Good morning. Thanks for being back on the show this morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So let's talk about the call from Governor Lamont. I think it's interesting because this comes as there was a horrific killing, as you heard this week, a 14-year-old Hamden boy who was shot in the back of the head and he died of his injuries earlier this week. And Governor Lamont then said, like, I'm done with this. I've had enough of this. This is ridiculous. We need to get tough on juvenile crimes. We need more support services. We need better court policies. We need stiffer penalties for people who have been repeat offenders. These are all things, correct me if I'm wrong, all things that you guys have been wanting to push for some time.
Yes, Melissa, this is exactly what we've been asking for, because we are seeing and hearing exactly what the governor, and I know the rest of the majority sees and hears all the time, too. It's just they're, for the most part, saying, well, you know, Connecticut is safer than Chicago. And it's really an inappropriate analogy, but that's what they're saying. And unfortunately, kids like the 14-year-old, we continue to lose. That's the troubling point, is that we see this. We aren't going to let this continue to persist. We want to do something. We want to address this issue because our youth are worth fighting for. I'm not going to get into a statistical analysis. If we get into the statistical analysis, guess what? We're losing kids. And I think it was encouraging to see that the governor finally recognizes what we have been talking about and has said something. But now it's time to do something. We need to do more than just talk about it. The Democrats have the votes. They control all the offices in Connecticut and, for that matter, Washington. They have the power to correct this situation, and they need to start to act.
What are the chances, Senator Kelly, that a special session could now happen? Because the last time you and I talked, it was kind of feeling like, you know what, we've brought this forward. They're still kind of giving us pushback. So we're probably not going to talk about this till February, when the next legislative session is slated for. But now, with the governor sort of making this huge announcement yesterday, like, he's tired of it. He wants it to stop. Do you think there's a better chance that the Democrats will now say, you know what, maybe we do have a special session?
Well, I don't know. That remains to be seen. I mean, I also saw a op-ed written by the Senate Democrat leaders that continues the same rhetoric that, oh, there's nothing to see here. There's nothing going on. Connecticut's one of the safest when you compare us to other states. But what they're not doing is comparing Connecticut to Connecticut. We have a 61% increase in murders in Hartford year over year, from last year to this year.
Wow.
One of the deadliest summers and years in memory. Shots fired in New Haven alone, just shots fired, we're up 122%. But that represents about 250 shots fired this year to date in the city of New Haven.
Wow.
It's 250 shots fired. I mean, and those are the recorded ones. And it's like, that's just too many.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they're trying to sweep that under the rug because, you know, Chicago's off the hook or New York's off
the
hook.
But why? Can we talk about that, though? I mean, maybe this is something I need to have a Democratic senator come on to explain that. And I've tried to reach out to Senator Duff about this, and I would like to try again. But why? Like, this doesn't make sense to me. Does it cost money or something to have a, I mean, help me to understand why we would push this off when inevitably we're going to talk about this in February. Why wouldn't we have the conversation right now? Is it because it costs money to have you guys all meet up and talk about? I don't understand why we're not working on this right now. Like, who cares what's happening in Chicago? We live here in Connecticut. I don't care what's going on. I want to know what's going on here and how do we keep our kids safe?
Well, I think when we went out and spoke with stakeholders, you know, we didn't stay under the Capitol Dome and talk to all our colleagues in an echo chamber. We went out and spoke with stakeholders. We talked to nonprofits. We talked with community leaders, social workers, public defenders, prosecutors, police officers, and chiefs, so that we got everybody's perspective. And the report that came back is what's embodied in our policy. They talked about, in the short term, we need criminal justice and police accountability, tools. The police need tools, as well as, you know, how do we stop and provide our youth real alternatives to a life in crime. And that has to deal with hope and opportunity in our cities. It starts with a good economy. You know, we're dead last in job growth and income growth. And in the Democrat leader's op-ed, they talk about all the bills that they passed under Democrat leaders and the General Assembly, but they don't talk about how this economy doesn't work for our kids or our cities. And yet the same people were in charge the last 10 years, and a lot of the reasons why we have such a poor economy is because the Democrats haven't been paying attention to it to the degree that's necessary to provide these pathways forward and real jobs that can actually pay a mortgage, can actually build a community, and make sure that our kids are put on the right track. I mean, just simple things like holding landlords and cities accountable for safe, adequate, and healthy apartments. Public housing you have in the city of Bridgeport,
mm-hmm.
And the city of Bridgeport is run by Democrats. So, you know, they're in control. They have all the power in the state of Connecticut. They
right.
can fix this if they want. The question is, when you see what's happening and we wake up every day to these horrible stories about how our youth are being murdered, why they aren't using their power for the betterment of our people.
We're talking to State Senator Kevin Kelly this morning. And Senator Kelly, we were talking about youth crime and cracking down on it essentially across the state of Connecticut. So what you're saying is because, and we've known this, the Democrats have majority rule in Hartford. I'm curious if you feel, since these proposals did not come from the Democratic Party, came from the Republican Party, I mean, do you think they're going to go anywhere? Do you think they're going to find a compromise? Will we find a compromise and be able to actually make progress on this problem, especially if they don't think it's that big of a problem?
Certainly, Melissa. You know, 10 days ago when we brought the policy out, it was myself and my colleagues on our side of the aisle. And here we are 10 days later, and the governor is signaling that he sees it the way we see it. And that's because, you know, I think our policy is a good idea. It's a safe idea. And good ideas always find friends, regardless of whether they're Republican ideas or Democrat ideas. If you've got something that's good and it puts makes the people of Connecticut better and safer, you're going to get support. And I think that's what we're going to do. We're going to continue to take these issues. We're going to continue to bring them to our colleagues under the dome and try to keep them in the forefront of the conversation. And the hope is that we start to address this sooner rather than later, because the safety of our children are at risk. And that's what we're here to do, is to try and make Connecticut a safer place with better policies.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes a lot of sense. And I wanted to switch gears really quickly, if you don't mind, Senator Kelly, because I wanted to talk about something else that really has, I'm going to say, it's really confused me. I've got to be honest. And I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it. So obviously the scandal in West Haven, big news. It's been big news. And we know that former state representative Michael DeMassa has stepped down. He resigned from the General Assembly. He has stepped down working for the city of West Haven. Fine. Now, he's been accused of something really awful, you know, mishandling over $600,000 worth of COVID relief funds. Yes, terrible. But again, he's innocent until proven guilty, essentially. Why hasn't Senator Dennis Bradley resigned? Because he, too, is accused of something not so great stemming back to his 2018 campaigning. And I just think it's interesting, like, we saw the governor come out and basically say, hey, you know, we can't have people like DeMassa representing our government. We had the Speaker of the House come out and say, you know, he had no choice but to resign. Okay, I agree. But, like, why is Senator Bradley still serving if this case is happening? I'm just confused, you know, why there's, like, a double standard here.
Well, first and foremost, and I think you're right in that in this country, everyone is innocent until proven guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, that notion is a Connecticut idea. That's why we're the Constitution state, because it's here that, you know, we believe that we derive our rights from a higher power and not from government. So government can't take those rights away without due process. And that's what I think is the key point here. Now, in both of those instances, in both West Haven and Bridgeport, I have yet to have the opportunity to read the indictments in total or to have an opportunity to talk to the representatives or their attorneys. But in these separate cases, the first with West Haven, in that case, and I think this is what distinguishes it from Bridgeport, is that the individual state representative did resign. He didn't go forward. I don't think he's pled yet. And his leadership in the House called for his resignation.
Right.
And I believe that they've had the opportunity to look at the facts and circumstances. In the case of Bridgeport, you know, the individual there is asserting that he is innocent until proven guilty, and he wants his day in court, and he wants to go through the crucible of due process and to make sure that government hears his side of the story. And his leadership has not called for his resignation.
Gotcha.
And I think that's a distinguishing factor there is that, you know, in that case,
I wonder why they're not calling for him to resign. I understand him saying, no, I'm good. I'm good with what I've done. I feel good. I could put my head on my pillow. But why the leadership isn't calling for it? It's just sort of it's a weird broken system. You know what I mean? If you've got one leadership saying, hey, this guy did something really wrong. We don't care what the court says. It makes government look bad. Step down. But then you have another side of Connecticut government saying, well, we're just going to wait for this guy to have his day in court. You know what I'm saying? It's just bizarre to me.
I understand the, you know, the concern because you always have that. But you also need to, you know, I know you recognize that in our system, just because the government, particularly when it comes to criminal accusations, just because the government says something doesn't make it so.
Mm.
And so people have the opportunity to go to an impartial third party, our court system, to have the government prove its case against them. And that's a hallmark of the American judicial system, and it's what distinguishes our country from others around the world. Here, you know, if this were happening in my caucus, I believe that I would be looking at the actual indictment. I would be talking with the individual and have to evaluate that process as to whether or not, like in the House situation, to call for the member's resignation, or in the case of Bridgeport, to say, well, you know what, I'm going to give our member the opportunity to be heard and to go through due process.
Senator Kevin Kelly, I appreciate you coming on to talk about a couple really big things happening, and I hope to have you back on really soon. Thank you so much.
You bet. Take care, Melissa.
Thanks. You too.